Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill 414 by the House Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Filling the Vacancy in the Office of United States Senator and to the Definition of Political Party. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 414 State Affairs with the same title attached as a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Seton, Coghill, and Wyrock. Do not pass Berkowitz. No recommendation Grunberg, Holm, and Lynn. The report was signed by Wyrock Chair. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 414 Judiciary with the new title, recommending do pass Samuels, Anderson, Ogg, Holm, McGuire. No recommendation Grunberg and Guerra. The report was signed by McGuire Chair. There's two committee substitutes.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 414 with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Objection. We have the Judiciary Committee substitute before us. Madam Clerk, are there amendments?
Amendment number one by Representatives Grunberg and McGuire to page 3, following line 27.
Senator Grunberg.
Move the amendment.
Without objection. There is an objection. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This will ensure, so there is no question, that the initiative process can be used in the future to direct how vacancies in United States Senate seats from the state of Alaska may be filled. It eliminates future potential litigation and makes it certain that the people can express their views through the initiative process. It's a good amendment. It empowers the people and we'll be able to be heard as a group.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from District 20 and I talked about this amendment in Judiciary and then prior to today. I'm not sure that it will do what he says, but it's worth a try. We had the debate in the House Judiciary Committee. I feel fairly certain that at best there's a healthy debate on the subject. The 17th Amendment to the Constitution, if I can read, Mr. Speaker, says that when vacancies happen in the representation of any state in the Senate, the executive authority of each state shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies, provided that the legislature of any state may empower the executive thereof to make temporary appointments until the people fill the vacancies by election as the legislature may direct. And that's the 17th Amendment. That's at the heart of this bill and the heart of this amendment. I think, and there are some others that think that, Mr. Speaker, the 17th Amendment makes it fairly clear that the authority to decide how these vacancies will be filled is vested solely with the legislature. That's the basis upon which a lawsuit has been filed. But I think the spirit with which the representative from District 20 introduces this is right. If it's possible for us here in the state of Alaska in this legislature to decide how these vacancies will be filled through the initiative process, if we can say what we think the 17th Amendment means, then by all means, let's do so. I think that the initiative wasn't a conceived idea back when the 17th Amendment was crafted. We know, Mr. Speaker, there are some areas for sure in jurisprudence that the courts have said you cannot delegate those powers as a legislative body, that when it says the legislature, it means the legislature, and it does not mean by initiative or by extension direct democracy. We know that it comes in under dedicated revenue provisions, appropriations. We just had a mental health lands trust issue that came out, University of Alaska issue that came out that said that even that was in effect an appropriation. So I think it's unclear. I don't have a problem with the amendment. There's already a statement of intent that says the exact same thing that has been adopted. So I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative McGuire. Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Not being a lawyer and certainly not knowing the Constitution as well as a lot of lawyers do, I just asked the question of the two members carrying this amendment. Are there any other states who have the initiative process that have given the power of the legislature over to the people that the Constitution supposedly gave power to the legislature?
Representative Croft.
Thank you. Just carrying on, there may be a number of questions, so the sponsors of the amendment might want to wait for them all. This amendment, frankly, confuses me. That's why I rose right after the co-chair of finance there, because the 17th Amendment either prohibits the use of initiative to define how you fill U.S. Senate vacancies, or it doesn't. And us passing a law that says we think you can do this by some other way than the federal Constitution allows is both confusing and I think largely irrelevant to a constitutional discussion. The 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution sets the default as it says you shall elect rather than the old system of appointing. It was ratified in 1913. And it uses the term legislature twice. It says the legislature may set other ways for filling these vacancies, other rules for filling vacancies as the legislature may direct. The sponsor statement talks about the Trust the People initiative. Well, I was one of the sponsors of the initiative. I was one of the people that formed Trust the People. And most of you know by now, I would think, that we had a lot of trouble getting that initiative back from the Attorney General's office and the Lieutenant Governor's office. And the argument they used was, we don't believe you can do this by initiative at all. We think when the 17th Amendment says legislature, they mean legislature, and that only this body can change the rules regarding how you elect and how you fill a vacancy in the U.S. Senate. But the federal Constitution meant legislature when it said it, and meant that only this body and the other body can take that action. If that's true, then they take that initiative off the ballot. It's the only reason that I intend to be voting for HB 414 is because that suit is ongoing. The Attorney General continues to use state resources to fight against, in my opinion, our initiative rights and trying to define that away. I don't think Amendment Number 1 significantly helps us. I don't think we can. I think either the Attorney General is right that the 17th Amendment, when it says legislature, means only legislature, or he's not. And defining a law, attempting to say what a word in the federal Constitution means or doesn't mean, just isn't going to work. And I think, it muddies the water. So I oppose the amendment because I don't think it can do what it intends to do, and I think it confuses that issue.
Representative Wyrock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know that the legislature has opined that we don't, or this body has opined, we don't like to meddle with ongoing litigation. I just wanted some clarification from the sponsors of Amendment Number 1, whether the pending litigation has a question in it of whether the lawmaking powers assigned to the legislature include the power assigned to the legislature by the 17th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States to direct how vacancies in the United States Senate shall be filled. Because if that is a pending issue in the ongoing litigation, I would have some reservations on this. So I would like to know that and sponsors.
Thank you, Representative Wyrock. Representative Bloomberg?
I hesitated to rise until I was sure I had all the questions. And I just ask, are there any other questions before I try to answer them? Good. Okay, to answer the co-chair's question from the Finance Committee, do any other states allow temporary vacancies to be filled in a manner that could be set by an initiative? I don't know the answer to that question. Not every state has the initiative process, and that's an issue that, frankly, hadn't come up. With respect to the question from the chair of the State Affairs Committee, whether the lawmaking powers assigned to the legislature includes this particular power, and I think that's a question that my friend to the left had also. I can answer that in part by saying it is not the intent of this amendment, and I'd like to make that quite clear. It is not the intent of this amendment to affect any ongoing litigation concerning the We the People initiative. This would deal with future uses of that particular power. The 17th Amendment, the language of the 17th Amendment, the relevant language says, and I think it's in your packet, Mr. Speaker, it looks basically like this. Pull it out. When vacancies happen in the representation of any state in the Senate, that's temporary vacancies. That's the paragraph we're talking about. The executive authority of such state, that's the governor, shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. What that means is the governor sets the date for the election. So if there's a the general rule is if there's a temporary vacancy, the governor may call a special election. And this was ancient language, but that's what it means. However, provided the legislature of any state may empower the executive thereof to make temporary appointments, that means until the special election is held. And this is the key phrase, until the people fill the vacancies by election, that means until the special election, as the legislature may direct. And what that means is in the manner that the legislature directs. And that's the key phrase that we're focusing on here. Now, there are two, so it's a question of state law because it empowers the legislature to make the decision. Now, the legislature in this state is limited also by the state constitution. So the legislature, with respect to the initiative process, Mr. Speaker, the legislature could not pass a law that says the people may by initiative appropriate money, because that is not permitted under the state constitution. However, and I'd like the members to look at their handy state constitutions, we're looking at Article 11, Section 1. The people may propose and enact laws by the initiative, or approved or reject acts by the referendum. But the key phrase in the state constitution, Mr. Speaker, is that the people have the right of the initiative unless it's specifically limited. And here, the initiative elections are restricted in Article 11, Section 7. The initiative shall not be used to dedicate revenues, make or repeal appropriations, create courts, define the jurisdiction of courts or prescribe their rules, or enact local or special legislation. So what that means is that under the state constitution, the broad policy is to favor the use of the initiative process in all subjects except those that are specifically limited in Article 11, Section 7. So that limits the power of the legislature to enact certain types of laws, like I just described. It would say, by initiative, you could appropriate money. It doesn't say that you are prohibited, legislative branch, from enacting a law that would allow an initiative to be used to fill a vacancy in the United States Senate from Alaska. That's not prohibited under the Constitution. And what we're doing in this amendment is specifically allowing that to be done. The legislature is allowed to do that under the state constitution, and it's allowed to do that under the 17th Amendment, because under the clause I've just read, Mr. Speaker, it says, until the people fill the vacancies by election, as the legislature may direct. And we're authorizing the people in this amendment, if it passes, to fill the vacancy by the initiative process. And I don't think, number one, I hope that answers my friend from Juneau's question, and I respectfully do not believe that it muddies the water in the manner my friend from Spinard says, because it clarifies and will eliminate, hopefully, any future litigation on the subject by specifically delegating from the legislature the right to have future initiative if the people of the state wish to propose it and pass it.
Representative Weirach.
Thank you. That does. That clarifies exactly how I'm going to vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg.
You should move up to the calendar for instruction of guests.
If we could, there's a motion on the floor. So if you could wait for this amendment to be dispensed with, it will move up the calendar. Is there further debate on amendment number one? Question before the body is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Anyone wish to change their vote? Representative Dahlstrom? From yay to nay?
Correct.
Does anyone else wish to change? Madam Clerk.
12 yays, 25 nays.
So amendment number one has failed to pass the House. Representative Guttenberg.
Permission to move up the calendar for introduction of guests.
Without objection, move up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the homeowners associations are in town. The home builders are in town. I assume they're homeowners also. But from my district, I'd like to recognize Mike Music in the Kravacevich Gallery and Terry Jasinski, who used to live in my district. I'm not sure where he is now. Okay. Thank you.
Further guests for introduction. Mr. Majority Leader.
Better get a brief at ease so I can get the names of some of the guests.
Take a brief at ease. House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks for the indulgence. Two members in the Paratrovich Gallery from my home district. Also up here with I'm getting brain lock all over the place today. Construction industry in my area, we have Wally Smith with Smith Alaska and Dave Dillard, who has 321 Construction Company, both from the North Pole area. Would you please welcome them?
Is there further guests for introduction? Seeing none. As advertised earlier, we are going to take a recess until 8:30. Prior to doing that, I'd like to move down the calendar to committee announcements so that all of you that have committee hearings this afternoon can announce that hearing to allow the public who may be watching to give them the understanding of why we are taking a recess. So under committee announcements, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Resources will begin promptly at 1:45.
Thank you. Representative McGuire.
Begin at 1:45.
Representative Harris.
Thank you. Finance at 1:30. We'll also have public hearings, but also have the bill that you just read across a little bit ago.
It's my understanding at 5:30 to 8:30, there's going to be a statewide hearing on the operating budget.
That's correct, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Labor and Commerce will meet same time at 3:15.
Mr. Norrie, leader.
Well, when we're ready to go back up the calendar, just let me know.
Okay. Further committee announcements? Okay. Mr. Norrie, leader.
Up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Without objection.
Thanks. And I'm poaching from somebody in Fairbanks. I don't know whose districts are out there. It's all kind of a mishmash to me. But I've got a good friend, actually, in Fairbanks, who's in the Perachevich Gallery, Sasha Zemanek. And I know Sasha. She's part of my ethnic contingency. She's an Antarctican like I am, and she's probably most famous among people because she's the only person I've ever known who actually got married at the geographic South Pole. So say hi to Sasha and her husband, Lee. Who's not here.
Further guests? Okay. And we'll recess until 8:30. It's rock and roll. House, please come back to order. By the looks of things, we do have a quorum. We are thus going to move up the calendar to introduction of guests without objection. To introduction of guests. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some very special guests in the gallery behind me.
What are they doing out this time of night?
they are the Pelican High School kids and two 12th graders, Gunnar Combs, Frederick Phillips, and Vance Ada Warda. And a 10th grader, Ethan Darinoff, and a 9th grader, Stefan Paddock, and their teacher, Eli J. Darinoff. And if they would all, I would appreciate if everybody would welcome them with a good round of applause.
Makes my question a little more relevant. How come they're not home studying? Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I too have a special guest tonight. She's a constituent. Her name is Sid Barty, and she is with the Key Coalition Committee, and I have to be especially nice to her, for not only because she's a constituent, which we don't get many constituents down here, but also her son, I found out, and my daughter go to the same elementary school, O'Malley Elementary, in the special ed program in Anchorage, and my daughter, Valentina, has always had a crush on her son. And I found out today in our meeting that her son has a crush on Valentina. So this may be a future in-law here. So please help me welcome Sid Barty.
That begs a comment, but I'll resist. Are there further guests for introduction? Madam Clerk, that brings us back down the calendar. Are there further amendments to House Bill 414?
Amendment number 2 by Representative Berkowitz, deleting sections 1 through 8 and 10.
Mr. Minor Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Before I move the amendment, I'd also like to note that there should be a conforming title amendment to go along with that, which would be delete filling the vacancy in the office of the United States Senator. And I move the amendment.
Without objection.
I'll divide the question if that will be the will body.
There's an objection. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This isn't the first time this body has looked at this issue. And I had distributed before we went on our break this afternoon some of the prior instances of when we did consider it and what the members had considered in the past. And there's an overwhelming majority of members who are here now who have looked at this issue carefully and have had the opportunity to vote on it.
I distributed that information because I want people to remember exactly what they did in the past. Because I think one of the things that creates the character of a legislature is consistency. It's not changing our votes without good reason. And when we make public policy, we do it after due deliberation and for the right reasons. And so what this amendment does is put a new issue in front of us, the single issue of the definition of political party. We've only recently considered what goes on with filling a vacancy in the office of the United States Senator. Since that time, there's been an initiative which suggests that this body was wrong. Well, let the voters determine if we were right or wrong. Let this go to the polls. Let the people make the choice. We've had our opportunity. So that's why I put this amendment forward and hope you give it the consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Minority Leader. Madam McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wouldn't dare speak until you recognize me. First, I want to say a couple of things. This process of appointing senators to fill vacancies has been a political football for both Republicans and Democrats. And it's been a political football since the 1960s. There have been various turns and courses, and I could spend an hour reading to you all of the different nuances. And they are credited to very smart Democrats and very smart Republicans. Starting back in 1967, when the law was changed to allow United States Senator Ted Stevens, a Republican, to be appointed. The law at that time said that it had to be a person of the same political affiliation. And it keeps going on and on and on. Up until the 20th Alaska Legislature, Mr. Speaker, of which many people here in this body served with under Governor Knowles. And in that year, in 1998, the bill was changed and a final version moved its way through, which, as we well know, Governor Knowles opposed. But what's fascinating is that when Governor Knowles vetoed the bill, in his veto letter, he said, "I see no reason to change the current practice for appointing U.S. Senate vacancies, which has historically served Alaskans well." So if anybody here on this floor has any misgivings about whether or not this issue has to do with the fact that you register or align yourself as a Republican or a Democrat, you are severely mistaken. The bill today, and this amendment, the reason I'm speaking so broadly, Mr. Speaker, is that the bill, the amendment would gut the bill. It would allow only the part that seeks to respond to Judge Reese's request for this body to respond on an issue that has to do with third-party qualifications for the ballot. So make no mistake, the minority leader has offered an amendment that would gut the part of the bill that seeks to clarify the way that we will, for the coming years, select a replacement for a U.S. Senate vacancy. And I would just only say that it's ironic to me that the minority leader talks about it being political when we all know that it's been political in the past. He did not choose to request a hearing on his own bill, which...
Mr. Norlier.
There's an imputation of motive here, and it's deviating from the subject.
Madam McGuire, if you would restrain from impugning someone's motives...
I will restrain from...
graciously appreciated.
You're welcome, and I will. I guess the fact that stands is that... the minority leader did not make a request for a hearing.
Mr. Speaker, I renew my objection, and again, I ask you to censure the member for deviating.
And so this amendment would gut the bill. The bill is a good bill. It responds to what I believe is the will of the people, and regardless of the motives of myself that have been impugned, which I won't speak to here today, but they
have. Senator McGuire, please do not impugn yourself as well.
I won't. Regardless of those, I'll say to you that I had a great opportunity over the interim to meet with people from my district as well as talk to folks from other members' districts, and I think that people want to have the opportunity to vote for the person that will replace the Senate vacancy. I think it's clear that since the 60s, we've changed the way that we do it. Whether or not it was the person of the same political affiliation, whether or not it was within a certain period of days, I think we've grown as a state. This is the most democratic way of doing it. I support it, and I would just maintain in the end that without this bill, there's a substantial, very real possibility that the people's will not be recognized, Mr. Speaker. As I mentioned earlier today, the 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution, in some people's opinion, makes it clear that only the legislature can change the way these vacancies are filled. So I would encourage all members to reject the amendment and support the bill.
Thank you, Representative McGuire. Representative Stoltz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker, on amendment number two. I'm kind of fond of the remaining part because it mirrors a bill that I've introduced that recognizes the emerging parties of Alaska, and having candidates of statewide caliber run for my district for Republican moderate, Green, and AIP at all levels. I want to be responsive, but just to do this, I think would do disservice to the overall intent of the other sections that would be deleted, including the repairing a deficiency, I believe, in a provision that allows for the shorter term appointments of U.S. senators for up to, I believe it's 60 or 90 days. That's an awful long time for the state of Alaska to be half naked, as it were, in the United States Senate without representation in the United States Senate. The member from District 25 and I are both interested in history, and we've read the Lyndon Johnson series. Latest book by Robert Carroll Master of the Senate, I believe it referred to in the 50s when Johnson was alternative minority leader and majority leader. I think the party control changed somewhere around 10 or 11 times. We saw this during the last Congress prior to this one. We saw how fragile majorities can be in Congress and how easily control can switch back and forth and how that affects our state. And so that provision alone is enough for me to. I'll address the larger issue in third reading, whichever day we debate that. But thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Stoltz, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to convince people that I wasn't going to speak on this amendment, but I wasn't. But I feel compelled to stand up and speak on behalf of my friend from the Turnagain District, and defend his motives. There is not a single member of this body who has more consistently, more times, more passionately said that if there is a U.S. Senate vacancy, it should be filled by an election so that the people can decide who fills the vacancy. He said that in 2001, at the time when this body passed the law that gave the governor the power to pick his own replacement. He said at that time, no, the people should decide. And he proposed an amendment, and the amendment was voted upon, and it was voted down along party lines. In 2002, he filed a bill to do the same thing, to give the people the right to pick their own U.S. senator. Did he file for a hearing? Well, I don't know whether he did or he didn't. But I can tell you one thing, if he did, he wouldn't have gotten a hearing, and we know that. We know that there's no way he would have received a hearing on a bill to reverse something the legislature just did. In 2003, he filed a bill, again, that said people of the state should have the right to pick their own U.S. senator.
Representative Samuels.
Yeah, point of order to the amendment, please.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Samuels.
Trying to explain how the amendment is completely consistent with everything the minority leader has done on the subject. And I'll try and keep it concise. But in 2003, he filed a bill that did the exact same thing that his amendment in 2001 did, and that his amendment right now would preserve for the right of the people to choose to do, which is let the people decide who their next U.S. senator should be. And let me note that in the 2003 bill, he did that before anybody even thought about it at initiative. He just did it because it was the right thing to do. So if there's one person who's been more consistent than anybody in his demand that the people should have the right to choose their own U.S. senator, it's the minority leader. And Mr. Speaker, given the choice between letting the people decide on this initiative or dumping the initiative by adopting a similar bill, which this bill would do, I think I prefer the amendment that the minority leader proposes, which is let the people decide. If this amendment fails, of course, there's no way I'm going to be able to vote against the bill tomorrow, because the bill says, do you think the people should be able to pick their own U.S. senator? And for me, the answer is yes. But given the preference and the choice the minority leader is presenting us with right now, today, the choice between letting the people decide or dumping that question off of the ballot so this legislature can decide, I say let the people decide.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Representative Weinreich.
Just on a point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker, as chairman of the committee in which the bill everybody seems to be alluding to resides, I've been trying to be very fair to every member of this body. If they ask for a hearing on their bill, despite the criticism I get from some, I hear it. I take great pride in keeping my word to people. When I say I'm going to hear a bill, I hear it.
So further debate. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to preface what I say by noting that I asked this body not to hear this bill today. And you all know that I did. There's a great civil rights leader named Julian Bond. Said that frequently politics becomes a competition between the spineless and the shameless. And I'm asking this body to show some pride. I'm asking this body to do what it's done in the past and be consistent. I'm giving the members here who have voted against this bill in the past the opportunity to do so again. And be consistent. Consistency is something people look for in their leaders. Trust is born of consistency.
Point of order, Ms. Speaker.
Senator Roberg, your point of order.
I believe it's clear that the minority leader is speaking to the motivations of the entire body or members therein. I wish he would restrain his remarks to the amendment, please.
Mr. Leader.
I'm speaking about the integrity of this body, Mr. Have the right to do that. And I have the right to expect this body to honor its commitments, just as any other member who stands before you does. The people expect us to do what we said we were going to do. The people expect us to be consistent. The people look to us for leadership. And when there's a bill that comes forward that takes away the right of the people to vote on an initiative, they will be skeptical of the motives of this body. They will question the leadership in this body. They will question the moral authority we have to lead on other pressing issues of the day. Mr. Speaker, we shouldn't be debating this bill today. We shouldn't be voting on this bill. There's an initiative out there where the people say they want to vote. And I don't know what the result of that election would be. I don't even know if they're going to get the chance to vote, or they would, because the initiative has not yet been certified. It looks like it will be, but it has not yet been certified.
Mr. Speaker, you served with me for 8 years. You know I've never shied away from speaking my mind when I think it's the right thing to do. And I'm not shying away now, not because the circumstances are the way they are, not because I might offend some of my friends here in the body, but because the integrity of what we do is at stake. If we, as a body, reverse course as dramatically as this bill proposes we do, what do you think people will say about us? How do you think they're going to look at the legislature? This isn't the right course. This isn't the right fight. There are bigger things for us to deal with. Vote for this amendment. Be consistent to the votes you cast in the past. Protect the integrity of this legislature. And let us go forward as one body to address the issues that are truly pressing, not the issues that are transitory and political. We can do better than this kind of crass partisan maneuver.
Further debate. Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't intend to belabor it, but on behalf of the members of this body that may disagree with some of those remarks, I just want to make a few. First thing is the minority leader is exactly right. The integrity of this body is at stake. When the Constitution was drafted to include a part with reference to the initiative process, it specifically included, Mr. Speaker, a provision that required more than 120 days to elapse between the adjournment of a legislative session and an initiative appearing on the ballot. I don't know if most members are aware of that, but I think it's something that's very important to note. It's clear that this constitutional provision was intended, in my opinion, to provide a means for direct democracy, a means for people to weigh in when they felt that their legislature was being unresponsive. And I think that's important. I do. I think that it serves a role, and Western states are the states that have the initiative process and are known for it. It is a new phenomenon. It did not exist. If you look at the eastern states, you will not see the concept of initiative contained in their constitutions. But when this provision governing the initiative was put in, it was carefully crafted, in my opinion, with the idea that the legislature and the people through direct democracy would work together. Why else would the conveners have put in a 120-day requirement, Mr. Speaker, if they didn't expect that the legislature would reconvene reflect upon the initiative that had been passed by the people? Why else, I ask you? So it is absolutely correct. The minority leader is right. It would be irresponsible to do anything other than what we are doing today, which is respond to the people. I wish that we had a crystal ball. I wish that we always knew what the people wanted. There have been many initiatives that have come through that have changed the way that legislatures, even before I served, think about policy issues with respect to the minimum wage. There are a variety of ones that come to mind. And this legislature has an obligation, in my opinion, to respond. And if we don't, then we are not representing the people of our districts, because it's clear that the majority of people in our districts have signed on to this initiative, and this is the will for them. My concern, as I have stated before, and I will just wrap up, it's sad to me that the minority leader has embarked down the path he has today. I don't want to get into it. I'm going to take the high road and simply say that this is good public policy for all of us, And public policy is a moving, changing landscape, Mr. Speaker. I heard the minority leader say something that was very disturbing. He said, we need consistency. I'm harking back to legislatures in the South and issues of segregation, where a vote might have been taken at that point in time to effectuate policies with respect to colored and white separate drinking fountains and so on. And I question whether the body at that point in time in the South would be doing the will of the people and doing the will of the nation good by remaining consistent. So consistency is an important quality, but not always, Mr. Speaker. Not when facts come to light, not when opinions change, not when it becomes evident that there is a time for change. And that's what's happened here today. That's what's happened over the interim. I've spent a lot of time talking to colleagues, and it isn't just me. This is an issue that was brought up throughout the interim, and this is the time to change it. And I would hope that people would reject the desire to have pride of authorship and commend them to reject this amendment, because it guts what is a very good idea, what is the right thing to do, and good public policy for the state of Alaska. And without it, there may be no substantial change to the policy in selecting U.S. Senate replacements. Because without it, Mr. Speaker, the Attorney General has brought a challenge with respect to the 17th Amendment, and it may be successful. So I urge members to reject the amendment.
Thank you, Representative McGuire. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to support this amendment. I've done a lot of soul searching over it, and I've decided to support the amendment mainly because of the amendments that the representative from District 20 tried to make in committee that would have locked this in for 2 years, the same. Initiative process would if the people were to vote on it. Those were defeated. Now I'd rather take my chances with the people rather than with this body, because I'm afraid that if we pass this here tonight, pass this bill probably tomorrow, that next year the body will come back and repeal it as they've done many times before. So, as far as I'm concerned, I'm just going to have to trust the people.
Representative Crawford, Representative Denberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative behind me talked about consistency. That's what I'm afraid of. The history of this body and overturning ballot propositions is consistently not very good. More than 50,000 people have signed this petition. Huge amount of support out in the populace. They're concerned. They want to vote. Let constitutional challenges go by way of the courts the way they will. I've heard legal opinions go both ways. That's not our job. Our job is to do what we think is right. What we think is right at this point, from my perspective, is to be consistent and allow the people to vote. Just a few short years ago, there was a ballot proposition that was taken off the ballot by action of this body, and the next year they turned around and, in my opinion, gutted it. If I was the public, I would be concerned. I would be mad, and I would be afraid what this body is going to do to that. I say let the people vote.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Representative Roberg.
Mr. Speaker, I did not intend to rise tonight, but I'm very distressed about the tenor of the debate, the questioning of the integrity of this body, which I hold very in great esteem and respect for all the members that make it up, both in the minority and the majority. The debate is disturbing to me. It is clear to me that this particular issue, as has been pointed out tonight quite readily, is a matter of politics. To look the public in the eye and to try to evade that by this very eloquent talk is, you're not going to fool them, and you're certainly not going to fool ourselves here. Let's be quite frank about this. To try to impugn the integrity of this body for some higher motivation when this is base hardball politics is folly. Let's not denigrate this body when we're talking about a subject which is fundamentally political in nature. It's not a matter of inconsistencies or consistencies. We have a constitutional right to act as the voice of the people and to pass legislation. Nobody should question our constitutional authority to do so. And I've heard that on this floor tonight. Some references to prior action. This body and our colleagues on the other side of the building have numerous times taken up issues that have been put before the public as initiatives and passed them. Literally half a dozen or more times. You know, this is not an unusual or different situation. I find it quite incredible that this one is quite unusual in a certain respect, because members of this body were part of the genesis of the initiative. And to me, that is a slap at the integrity of the body. So, Mr. Speaker, I wish that we would keep our respect and the level of debate at a point where we can continue and not denigrate this particular body.
Representative Ogg.
Mr. Speaker, it's being a new person here, not having been in the past and acted on this, and it's interesting to me, the process I see, and just trying to address the will of the people. Petitions were passed out, an initiative was filled out, and the people were very clear. They would like to have their senators elected should one expire or resign while in office. And I've watched in the past as a citizen that the legislature has sometimes taken that voice of the people and said, this is a good idea, and we should put that into effect. And they have at times come very close, or come as close as they could, to enacting that will of the people. And it's a good will of the people. I think the will of the people is really clear. We want to have the ability for the citizens to elect a replacement to a U.S. senator. And what this amendment does is says, no, we don't want to do that. Well, we don't want to do it for a while here. We want to wait. And I don't think that when an issue this important comes up, we should wait. We should enact the will of the people as quickly as possible if we agree with it. I agree with it. I think voting for a U.S. senator is the proper thing to do. Now, if we deny the people what they have indicated through the petitions, which I thank the people in this body who went out and got those petitions, because it shows us that there's that groundswell, and I appreciate that. But what happens if we don't do this? And we go this route and we deny the will, and God forbid that we lose a senator, we're going to be in a situation that the people don't want. We're going to appoint another senator. And the timelines of passing this as soon as possible gets the view of the citizenry inactive. And I don't want to wait in case some kind of event like that happens. I want the people of this state, should that happen, to have the earliest opportunity to vote for the next senator. So I'm going to oppose this amendment. I'll vote against it.
Thank you, Representative Ogg. Is there further debate? Ready for the question? The question before the House is the passage of amendment number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Madam Clerk.
9 yeas, 22 nays.
So amendment number 2 has failed to pass the House. Madam Clerk, do you have further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Madam Clerk, would you re-announce the vote call?
9 yeas, 29 nays.
And so amendment still has failed to pass the House. Mr. Majority Leader. We're getting worse.
For that, Mr. Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that a committee substitute for House Bill 414, Judiciary, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is an objection. This bill will be held over until tomorrow's calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
CS for House Bill 15, Finance, entitled An Act Relating to Fair Trade Practices and Consumer Protection to Telephone Solicitations to Charitable Solicitations and Providing for an Effective Date. The bill's in second reading and an amendment number 1 by Representative Grunberg and Fate to page 2, line 2.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a technical amendment. I move it.
You move the amendment. Is there an objection to amendment number 1? That objection, amendment number 1 is passed. Madam Clerk, do you have further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 15, Finance, be considered, as amended, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we have House Bill 15, Finance, amended. Third reading. Madam Clerk, would you please read the title?
CS for House Bill 15, Finance, amended, entitled An Act Relating to Fair Trade Practices and Consumer Protection to Telephone Solicitations to Charitable Solicitations and Providing for an Effective Date.
Under discussion, Representative Fake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You will note the low number, HB 15, on this bill. Requires a little bit of explanation. This bill started in the last session. As you all remember, there was a federal piece of legislation. It was a federal HB 395, which was making its way through Congress at the same time. That bill subsequently passed, was signed into law, but was challenged. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals challenged on constitutional grounds. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals just lately, within the last month, ruled that that was constitutional, and that bill was allowed to pass. In the meantime, the Department of Law for the state of Alaska began to make the changes necessary for the application of that for the state of Alaska, specifically for the state of Alaska. Found out that there was an HB 15 that had also been a telemarketing bill. Used that as the carrier, folded that into this bill, and as we see it today. So basically, we have a federal law in place, a telemarketing bill in place. Is what this bill simply does. Is the Department of Law has fleshed this bill out to introduce those penalties and the regulations required to adopt this bill specifically for the state of Alaska. It's the kind of bill that the registry is already in place at the federal level, and they have adopted the guidelines. The Department of Law, which will be incorporated in this bill, will be adopted. Those guidelines for registration will be adopted by the state of Alaska. The kind of bill that we've been seeking, and I would urge you folks to vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fate. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also urge the body to vote for this bill. It's quite a familiar bill. I've been watching it for quite a while. It also looks like House Bill 5. House Bill 317 from the year before, but has all the elements in it that I believe that we need, and I believe it's good legislation and should be passed.
you, Representative Crawford. Further debate? Seeing no further debate, the question before the House is the passage of committee substitute for House Bill 15, Finance amended. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk will lock the roll. Does any no vote wish to change your vote? Madam Clerk.
35 yeas, one nay.
And so the House has passed committee substitute for House Bill 15, Finance amended. Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on the passage of committee substitute for House Bill 15, Finance amended, be considered the roll call vote of the roll call vote.
Without objection, passage of the bill will be considered the roll call vote and effective date clause, thus adopting the effective date clause. Madam Clerk, would you please read the last item of tonight's calendar?
CS for House Bill 349, Judiciary amended, entitled An Act Amending Rule 412, Alaska Rules of Evidence. The bill's in third reading.
Under debate, Representative Petula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request moving back to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment.
Without objection, we are back in second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, and that is amendment number one.
Passed an amendment yesterday, yes. Yeah, so I move amendment number two. Thank you,
there
Mr.
There is an objection.
Thank you,
Representative Petula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this amendment simply clarifies what the showing that the prosecution, what the level of information the prosecution must make to make a showing in this kind of a case. And in criminal cases, that is often clear and convincing evidence. But at times, it can be even lower than that. It can be what we call a preponderance of the evidence, which is like a 51%. Level. You go preponderance of the evidence, then you go clear and convincing evidence, which is about two-thirds, and then, of course, you go beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the highest standard, which is at trial. This is an effort to be sure that when this type of information is used, since it's using illegally obtained information and it's an important constitutional right involved, that we use a proper standard, a higher standard than just maybe more likely than not, more preponderance of the evidence. So clear and convincing evidence is a good standard. It's often used in criminal cases, and I believe it should be clear and used here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petula. Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would speak against the amendment, and had it come up in committee and given me some chance to look at it and given the committee some chance to look at it, I may or may not favor it. But to do this work on the floor where you were setting the standard, I would give I'd give my word to the minority whip that I will look into it as it goes through the system. But for right now, I hate to shoot from the hip on the floor. We did this on a bill that was another part of this package earlier, and quite frankly, I'm going to have to fix that also in the other body. So I would give my word to the minority whip that I will look into it. I will get all sides of the issue and see if this is the correct standard. But at this time, I would very much urge the members to vote no and not do committee work here on the floor. Thank you.
Representative Messick.
Just a clarification, Mr. Speaker, for the amendment. It says page 2, line 2.
Through the speaker, the problem is that we have to go back to the judiciary version, so you have to go all the way back into your judiciary version of the bill to find the proper placement for the amendment. So it's on page 2, line 2, and it's after the word shows, and it would be shows by clear and convincing evidence, or again on page 2, line 12, after the word shows. In the bill that we've got before us, because of the amendment in the previous day, it may be at a different place, but it's after the word shows, and it's the level of proof that you have to have for that showing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petula. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the offer of the sponsor of the bill to take a look at it. Elsa, unfortunately, that's an inappropriate offer. I mean, we have this bill here now, and it's our job to take a look at it, and I think that's what we need to do. And as someone who has used the evidentiary code, although not recently, it is very, very important that we specify what standards we're using. Because a failure to specify could lead to inconsistent application of the rule, and inconsistent application of the rule never helps the administration of justice. So to the extent that we need to address it here, I urge the body to address it here. I mean, if people want to debate what the appropriate standards are, that's something we ought to do. But the standard of clear and convincing is appropriate under these circumstances. It means that the trier of fact, the judge or in this case who would determine the admission, is fairly certain that this is the right thing to do.
Representative Wyrock.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I guess I had a question for the maker of the motion in the following context. It's my understanding that these kind of evidentiary issues are ruled on prior to any trier of fact taking of the evidence, so that there may be motions to eliminate evidence before it can go before a jury. And when a judge has this kind of evidence before them, and they're presented with a standard of proof that they have to be shown before they will allow the evidence in or not, it's on a case-by-case basis, and it depends on the judge that the question is presented to. So every judge will have their own notion of what preponderance of the evidence is, which is 51%, or clear and convincing. It's no cookbook you can really apply this to. So what I was curious about is whether the kind of evidentiary questions that we're talking about all have the same sort of clear and convincing standard, or whether this is set apart in this bill.
Representative Petullo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I don't believe it's changed. And when I practiced, the standards, the beyond a reasonable doubt, clear and convincing, or by a preponderance, are definitely outlined in case law, and definitely have their own meanings. And the judges aren't just picking them, picking which one they would like at any given time. So I think normally in cases like this, it's going to be clear and convincing evidence. You don't want, in a case like this, we're showing to simply be a preponderance of the evidence and be 51%. We're dealing with important constitutional rights. We're dealing with illegally seized information. So the effort is to be very clear from this body at what level we would like that standard. I don't, however, feel it should be beyond a reasonable doubt, because that's the highest level you can get. And that was the effort, was to clarify that it was not just a preponderance. It was not 51%. It was more likely than not. It was about two-thirds of the way there, and that's the clear and convincing evidence standard. Thank you.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very briefly, I apologize to the body for making an inappropriate offer, so I guess I won't look at it. And I would... I would still encourage them to look no, and then I might. Thank you.
You ready for the question? The question for the body is the adoption of Amendment Number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Anyone wish to change your vote? Madam Clerk.
12 yeas, 26 nays.
So Amendment Number 2 has failed to pass the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Hey, just a brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
I'll stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar? Representative Cotula? Prior to,
I'd ask that we return to second reading for purposes of this amendment.
Without objection, we'll return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, and that being Amendment Number 3.
I move the amendment.
Without objection, there's an objection? There is an objection, Representative Cotula.
Will you work on this one, too? No. Mr. Speaker, and I'd ask just a tiny bit of latitude here, because to explain the amendment, I've got to give a little bit of a picture on the bill, and that is this. With this bill, we will overturn a time-honored rule of evidence by allowing information that's illegally seized into a trial to impeach information given by a defendant that the prosecutor feels is untruthful. My sense and why I've offered this amendment is this. If we allow the Constitution to be avoided in this manner, so that this information for the first time comes in Alaska in these circumstances, then I feel the trier of fact, that is either the judge or jury, should be able to know how the information was gathered. It all revolves around very important constitutional rights to be free from search and seizure. So if we're going to allow the information in, I just think people deserve to know how that information was gathered. So if you have the right to hear it, you also should have the right to know how it was gained. And that's what this amendment would do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When I write my book on experiences learned in my freshman year in the legislature, I'm going to put this under the chapter of don't give an inch in committee, because they'll take a mile on the floor. So we built in sidebars on this, on the evidence rules, to exclude the bad faith exceptions. So if a police officer or anybody in law enforcement acts in bad faith, the evidence is out and the evidence stays out. If there's any coercion, the evidence stays out. If the evidence is taken involuntarily, the evidence stays out. If the evidence was supposed to have been recorded and it is not, the evidence stays out. What happens is, in a case, they're going to have an evidentiary hearing outside of the jury. And to bring that type of minutia into the jury does nothing but muddy the water. It is akin to bringing in, for instance, what a young woman might be wearing into a rape trial for the sole purpose of muddying the waters. And in this case, what you've done is in an American justice system, when we exclude evidence, we do that to punish the police officer, and by for punishing all of us by not having the evidence allowed in that we know. So in the example, the evidence is thrown out. We've already punished the police officer. Now the person's going to get on the stand, and he lies about it. And if we muddy the water again, we're doing nothing but punish the police officer again and allowing the lies to continue. It completely guts the intent of this bill, is to allow the defense to go in there and for no other purpose other than putting down the minds, you're putting the cop on trial. The trial is about the defendant. That's the point of the bill. Don't lie when you get on the stand. We've already punished the cop. The evidence is out. That's the point. But if you lie when you get on the stand, then we're going to leave it up to the jury now. Right now, the jury has no say. If evidence is excluded against me and I did something very bad, the evidence is out, I get on the stand, I can spin a story and tell anything I want, and the evidence stays out. The judge knows I'm lying. Prosecutor knows I'm lying. Defense lawyer knows I'm lying. The bailiff knows I'm lying. But they don't make the decision. The jury makes the decision, and the jury should know the truth. And so we can get it's hard to stay away from the guts of the bill right now, because the amendment basically guts the bill. So I would respectfully ask that we reject this. I can go into, and I will, as a matter of fact. When you look at a warrant, a lot of times there are nuances. It's not bad faith on the police officer. In fact, it's very rarely bad faith. You can have a case where a search warrant said the blue house at the corner of Arctic and Diamond, and it's a red house. And well, you know, that's evidence is out. Doesn't matter if there's a meth lab in there. Doesn't matter if they're making child pornography in there. And away you go. And the minority leader is shaking his head. I've got a better example for you. We had evidence excluded in a trial in Anchorage where the police officers knew they had other evidence to who did it, some other statements. They brought the defendant in. They called the district attorney. They asked, how do we question this person? The district attorney gave them specific sequence of events of what to do. They did it. They videotaped it. And there was a nod of the head, literally, that took 6 years to determine on whether or not he goes, uh-huh, and he meant yes or not. And that's the reality of what happens in some of these evidence rules. It's not kicking in doors and pistol whipping people. And if it is, we've thrown out the coercion, we've thrown out the non-voluntary, and we've thrown out the non-recording. We've tried to limit the bad faith exceptions to this, but allow a simple mistake or an error in judgment and allow them in to, frankly, so you don't get up on the stand and blatantly lie and everybody knows it. Thank you.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to note it for the record, I didn't talk on all the other bills tonight, so I've saved it up. Yeah, thank you. One of the reasons I'm for this piece of legislation is that I agree with the argument that the prior speaker, the sponsor of the bill, makes, that it makes sense when there's a difference between the two stories to have them both out. That is, in the situation you have here, the police officer doesn't usually Mirandize, but whatever violation, in some way doesn't say the right words before the statement is made, and for that reason is excluded. For good reasons, because we want to make sure people know about their constitutional rights and want to make sure that they're informed of that. But then they attempt to get on the stand and say something fundamentally different. And that's the point of the bill, and it is hard to talk about the amendment without talking about the bill. It's the point of the bill, and I think it's a fundamentally fair one. It's the federal rule generally, and it hasn't been the rule in Alaska, and the point of the bill is to make sure that it is. The point of the amendment is to say, when that happens, when there's a distinction between the two stories, a difference, we don't know which one was lying, frankly. And the prior speaker said over and over, when you know that's lying, you know what you know is there's a difference between the two. What you know, and that's why it makes sense to me that we would put both of them out. What this amendment says is when you do that, say, Officer Higgins, did you tell them they had a right to remain silent? It is not an extended foray. It is not a muddy in the waters. It allows, it's in, I think, the spirit of the bill, a bill that I support. It puts the evidence where it should be when you have that distinction between two stories, all before the jury. So they get to hear the one story and the circumstances surrounding it, and the next one. And you get to say, both sides get to say why the one or the other would be the more believable. The situation you made that first story, what the situation you were under, the pressure, the event, the whatever, versus the situation you were in the next one. You get to make a determination. I think it is improper for the statement to have been out, and that's what the bill fixed. But I think it would be improper for the jury to never know the circumstances surrounding each of the statements. So far from gutting it, and I think that just seems an exaggeration to me at the very least, but I think it is completely within the intent. Though I don't want to get into intent, but the purpose of the bill, to have the jury see both statements, and hear the facts surrounding each one and be able to make up their own mind.
Mr. Nerdler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know the hour's late, but I just want to make a couple of points. The sponsor of the bill is partly right when he says the trial's about the defendant. It's also about the victim, but mostly it's about justice and doing justice. And part of justice is, in the criminal arena, is remembering what the two salient features of a criminal trial are, which is the presumption of innocence and the burden of proof. And every trial is about that. Sometimes in our system, the guilty go free, but our system is designed so that we don't convict the innocent. And that's what all this balancing is about. I mean, the exclusionary rule isn't designed to punish police conduct in total. It's designed to protect the rights of the general citizenry. You never hear about violations where people aren't charged. You never hear about those kind of violations because the type of censure that occurs for bad police conduct or inappropriate police conduct occurs in the criminal trials. It's when innocent people get caught up in the criminal justice system that you want to have the impact of the exclusionary rule. And it's unfair, and in my experience, I spent a number of years in the courts and as a prosecutor, as a defense attorney. And most cops I know do the right thing, sometimes they do the wrong thing, but their motives are usually pretty good, but not always. Not always. So it's a good thing to be able to tell the jury here that the evidence was improperly obtained. But what trumps that in all cases, which is why some of this discussion is only a partial explanation of the evidentiary rules, is evidentiary rule 403, which is where you balance the prejudicial impact of information against the probative impact. Is the information more likely to inflame the passions of the jury than it is to enlighten them? And that's part of every balancing act that a judge makes. And so evidence rule 403 is an umbrella over evidence rule 412. And so we can, with some assurance, I feel, accept this amendment, knowing that a judge would say, no, this is too inflammatory for a jury to hear in this case. We're not going to give this information to a jury. That balancing act has to occur, because just as the defense is entitled to a fair trial, so is the prosecution.
Further debate. Wrap up, Representative Cotullo.
In wrap up, it is hard to talk about this amendment without talking about the bill, and I'm glad that other members have filled in. I want to thank the member from District 29 because I know that he has tried very, very hard to get a good bill and to get something that makes sense, and I've struggled with this for a couple of weeks trying to think about what would make sense. When I did trial work, I wasn't always sure about the truth and about whether justice was being done. I think that the effort is to get more toward the truth with this fundamental bill, but without this amendment, you've left out the other part of the story. And I think that if you do that, you haven't met the protection of the constitutional right that's at stake here, and it's an important right. So I'd ask the members to pass this amendment, to put more information, not less, before the trier of fact, and to give it that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cotullo. You ready for the question? Question before the House is the adoption of Amendment Number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change their vote? Madam Clerk.
14 yeas, 23 nays.
So Amendment Number 3 has failed to pass the House. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next amendment? Brings us back to third reading. Mr. Minority Leader.
Well, I'm still here. Okay. ask leave of the body to move back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, that being Amendment 4.
Without objection, Mr. Minority Leader.
I move the amendment.
Without there is an objection.
Thank you very much. And I actually move to modify the amendment because I neglected to note that on page 2, the offending phrase, at least in my mind, is also on line 14. I'd also note at the clerk's insistence that I cited to the amended copy that's on our desk rather than the judiciary version, which is in front of us. So I hope that's clear for the record. The reason I'm moving to delete co-defendant or former defendant in this case is I don't know what it means. I mean, when you look at particularly the first use of any prosecution to impeach the defendant, co-defendant, or a former defendant
who made the statement. Which who are we talking about? I mean, that's kind of a critical thing to know. And there are all kinds of circumstances that can surround someone being a former defendant, just as there are all kinds of circumstances that exist between people who are co-defendants. They might have trials that have been severed. One might have cut a deal. The other might not have cut a deal. A former defendant might be someone who was initially listed on a charging document and was subsequently removed. At least the term former defendant isn't one that I'm actually familiar with. And so that in particular I'm confused about. So I just don't know what it means when you talk about the defendant, co-defendant, or former defendant who made the statement, not a statement, but the statement. So whose statements are we going to be using to impeach which of these individuals? I'm a little unclear on that. And for the same reason, I think it's unclear what happens in the between a defendant, a co-defendant, or a former defendant. Which evidence? Whose evidence? Where was it obtained? Maybe the trials were improperly joined. There's all kinds of situations that could exist. I think if we're talking about ensuring that a trier of fact has access to information that a defendant gave inconsistent statements or there's evidence that contradicts what that individual did, then let's focus on just that defendant.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And once again, back to give an inch in committee, and because this wasn't mine. This was actually, I believe, the representative from District 23's idea. Originally, we had in there witness, we tried defendant. And the problem with that is if you have co-defendants in a case, one person's statement is suppressed, they take the stand and lie, or they take the stand, excuse me, they take the stand and change their statement. That is very appropriate, what the Representative Bernard said earlier. They take the stand and change their story against their co-defendant. We want to make sure that when we say the defendant, it included both of them or all six of them or however many there are. Or if one person makes a deal and he had his thrown out, he would be the former defendant. And I, to me, it was rather it's rather clear, but I've been staring at it for, you know, several months now. So to me, it's rather clear what it means, and the intent is in trials where two or three people are there together, one of them makes a deal, one of them separates, that none of them are going to be able to use to get on the stand, change the story without having the evidence come back in to impeach either the defendant, the co-defendant, or the former defendant. Thank you. Vote no.
Representative Catula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It really is a clarifying amendment. Right now, you can't tell which defendant, when, offered by whom, and who gets to object. Clearly says the prosecution can object, doesn't mention the defense counsel objecting, which, I mean, it sounds maybe silly, but it could be a problem, truly, because you've got a constitutional right at stake. You start creating all kinds of really weird problems in co-defendant cases, and it just isn't clear. So I think we're better off going with the amendment, taking that unclear language out of this bill. Thank you.
Further debate. Question before the body is the adoption of amendment number 4. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change the vote? Madam Clerk.
9 yeas, 28 nays.
So amendment number 4 has failed to pass the House. I'll stand at ease. House, please come back to order. House, please come back to order. Representative Dahlstrom. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a small amendment up at the clerk's desk there, and it's amendment number 5. Isn't that right, Susan? Number 5. When we put in amendment number 1 yesterday, Representative Samuels did, and line one, there was the former defendant, wherever he's from.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Point of order.
What's the point?
The point is we're talking about an amendment in the third reading, so I would suggest to the member that he move to second reading and see if we agree with it.
Well, we don't have a specific amendment before us. This is a conceptual amendment in an effort to save time and effort and the duplicating costs. I want to let Representative Grusenberg. I got bet on the mic. It's late. Just to explain the conforming amendment, then if you would then make the motion to return. So just to give the members a little bit of information and background.
We'll get this train going yet. Okay.
It's a long
the amendment, Mr. Speaker, is up at the desk. When the representative from South Anchorage, whom I named before, offered yesterday the line one, page two, former defendant in the case, and again it was on line 12, inadvertently that amendment was not offered on line 14, where it also says former defendant, and technically there should be in the case added there too. And it's up at the clerk's desk. If the members want, we can distribute it, but I would just move and represent the same representative sponsor the bill. Is a co-sponsor on
without objection, we'll return to second reading for the purpose of specific amendment. That's amendment number 5, which is conceptual, and it should read on page 2, line 14, after defendant, in the case. Does everybody understand the amendment? Is there an objection? Without objection, then, amendment number 5 is adopted. Brings us back to third reading. Representative Samuels.
I'd like to call the House.
There's a call placed in the House. While we are awaiting the satisfying of the call, I'd like to continue the debate on the bill to expedite the evening. Is there discussion, Representative Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've pretty much covered it in amendment number 3 there. To go a little bit further, 30 states specifically have this type of rule. Only 3 disallow it. I haven't heard back from the others. I've been trying to get in touch with all of the others. So Alaska, West Virginia, and Hawaii are alone in the current rule that they have. The federal government does it, and the reality is that a very, very small number of Alaskans are going to be affected by this legislation. Roughly 1.5% of cases go to trial. It would have to be the percentage of those would be very small of the evidence has been suppressed. It would have to be a small number of those who chose to testify and the small number of those who chose to change their story. So it's a very small number of people, but I would say that for those few number of people, there is probably very, very little that we're going to do here, whether it be a gas line or a fiscal plan or any of the big picture issues that are more important to them than this right there. And I'll give you 2 examples. If you are a jury foreman, or even just any member of a jury, and you listen to a case and you think that you've got all the facts and you go back and make a decision and you decide to acquit somebody and you find out 5 minutes after you acquitted this person that the statements and the evidence were thrown out and he got on the stand and lied to you and nobody told you about it. And if this person raped your daughter or raped anybody's daughter, you're on the jury. That is unfair to you as a member of the society. It's unfair to you as a member of the jury. If you're the victim and you're sitting in the front row, I can't even begin to tell you what you would feel. If this person that there, you know the other story that he told, and you don't know which one is the truth, but you know that there's a different story out there. And if he murdered your child, or if he raped your daughter, and you know what you think,